Let's start with you, Larry. The question of Harry Houdini and whether he was murdered or not. How did all that come about?
Well, you know, we did an exhaustive amount of research for our book on Houdini, and we uncovered many, many new things about him. The first thing that drew a lot of attention was the fact that Houdini was doing some spying work, he was doing that. We have documentation that he was doing that for the British government, contacts at Scotland Yard, and later he would have been at MI5. But the whole notion of the mysterious aspects to his death came about when we started, you know, obviously researching the end of his life, and there were, you know, many, many questions that were unanswered, including the leading question was that the cause of death just couldn't exist. I mean, he, on his death certificate, says he died of peritonitis that was occasioned by traumatic appendicitis from a blow to the stomach. And, you know, we searched the literature and talked to, you know, very many eminent doctors and forensic pathologists, and they said, well, it just doesn't exist. So we began to look more closely at the context of Houdini's life within, I'd say, the last year of his life. And we found that he was involved in a very, very contentious battle with an organized group of spiritualists. These were people who were claiming that they were able to make contact with the dead, and they were basically, you know, praying. In Houdini's eyes, they were praying on the most vulnerable people in society, people who had just lost their loved ones. This is right after World War One, so there were a tremendous amount of young men who died in that conflict. And also there were tremendous flu epidemics at that time. So nearly every family had somebody who had died before their time. And these people, the spiritualists, were taking a lot of money, in some cases getting people to sign over their fortune, sign over their homes. Houdini saw this as a gross abuse, and he started a campaign. In fact, he called it my own secret service, and he organized, this was a real organized campaign. He would send his showgirls as undercover operatives into seances, and they would take mental notes of everything they saw. They would actually physically mark the premises as they left with chalk mark to prove that they had been there. They would report back to Houdini. If Houdini was suspecting that these people were really unscrupulous, the next day or the 2 days later, he would come back in disguise with undercover policemen.
Ah, okay.
And Houdini, in the middle of the, and don't forget, he knew all the tricks of these spiritualists because in his youth, he had been one himself. So, but, you know, he did that only for a few months as a stage act with his wife, Bess, and he had such moral pangs about doing it. He was the son of a rabbi, don't forget. So, you know, Houdini would come in disguise in the opportune time when he knew that the medium would be doing up to some trickery. He'd make a signal, they'd turn on lights, they'd catch the medium, you know, in the throes of the deception, and Houdini would yell, "You're under arrest!" And they'd go, "Who are you?" And he'd whip off his beard and wig and go, "I'm Houdini." And, you know, when you talk about it now, Houdini was at this point, 1924, 1925, he was the most famous person on the planet. He was the world's leading entertainer.
Oh, he was huge. Absolutely.
He was a movie star. So, you know, this would be like, Angelina Jolie barging into it. I mean, so it really was an amazing thing that he was doing. Of course, this led to a lot of enmity. And we found that there were constant death threats on his life. I mean, he was writing this in letters to his friends. He was advising his female undercover operatives to carry guns. He even went so far as to turn mediums and have them. And now we found letters that nobody before had been able to figure out the context of what these letters were in private collections. But these were letters from mediums who were informing on other mediums who were Houdini's enemies. And, so it was a very, very nefarious kind of proposition that was going on with the spiritualists and their battle with Houdini. We then looked at some very disturbing incidents of what was called at the time ptomaine poisoning. About 3 months before Houdini died, he starts reporting to friends that he's getting incidents of this gastrointestinal, mm-hmm. Incident.
So it was ongoing. It was just, I guess, it was growing within him, huh?
It was ongoing. One of the modus operandi of the spiritualist was poisoning. There was, absolutely no autopsy done on Houdini at the time. There was a, while he was in the hospital in Detroit, there was a doctor who we know very little about, we don't even know who asked him to come in, but his name was Lefevre. He came in and administered so-called experimental serum to Houdini. Nobody knows what that is. At the time of Houdini's death, there were some leading publishers. One of them was Bernard McFadden, who, went on to own McFadden Publications, who called for an immediate investigation into Houdini's death and suspicions arousing, especially with this experimental serum. He was completely shut out. The hospital never released any records, and so his death, remained a mystery. We think if you put it in context, you can make a case that there's a possibility he could have been poisoned.
Was this person even a doctor who was up there?
Well,
administering this experimental
serum?
No,
I think he was a doctor.
Okay.
What his relations are, if he had any, and what his relations are to some of the other actors in this drama, we don't know. One of Houdini's main nemesis at the time was the husband of this spirit medium named Marjorie. She was the most famous medium in the world at the time. Houdini had basically exposed her because she was going for the prestigious Scientific American Award. Houdini, with his reputation on the line, because he was one of the judges, exposed her, and that began a very, very acrimonious relationship between Marjorie and her husband, who was a doctor, prominent doctor in Boston named Dr. Crandon.
Well, let's get to you, Professor James Starrs. What brought you into this investigation?
I became part of the investigation when Dr. Michael Bodden, a very close colleague and friend, called me and suggested that I should take a look at the book, and that in light of my considerable experience in exhuming and trying to resolve mysterious cases, that I might be taken by some of the concerns that he felt about the findings or the new findings in the book, which I did. And then I received a phone call from Larry Sloman asking if I would take this on as a scientific enterprise. And I put together a scientific team with anthropologists, pathologists, toxicologists, you name it, all willing to sign on because of the view that they felt that this was a credible investigation by way of exhumation. I went to the scene where the burial occurred in Queens, New York, took measurements, took soil samples, and feel that in light of the burial practices, in light of the bronze coffin, in light of the soil analysis that I've conducted, I think the remains would be in sufficiently good condition for me to